Good afternoon and welcome to the Technology Show. Great to have you with us and great to have our, well, okay, you're not my guest, you're our regular great contributor. How does that go?
Co-host.
Oh, you want that one, do you?
Yeah, I want co-host.
Oh, you just got demanding now.
Studio T people in it.
Do you want
co-host.
Your name on the door, name on the chair, coffee?
And a rider, yes.
We'll see what we can do. I'll ask my agent. I'll speak to your agent, yeah?
Yes. You can actually, yes.
Have you got one?
Yes.
Are you really?
Have a chat to my agent.
Oh, gosh. Okay, well, I don't. Okay, my people will speak to your people, as they say, in the business. Alexander McNabb, spot on PR, self-described geek, who is the unorganiser of the Geek Fest, writer, and an all-round communications guy. Good afternoon.
And man with flu. Yes,
and
good
man
afternoon.
With flu. We both have croaky voices, so it's going to be a cough relay today, hopefully. Well, hopefully not. We're armed with water, strepsils, tissues, the whole lot. We're set.
Great, isn't it?
Yep.
Hey, guess what I found?
What? Oh, what's that?
This? Oh, sorry, I'll just get to the end of the microphone. This is today's Google Doodle.
Oh.
And it's actually a fully functioning Moog synthesizer.
Isn't that fantastic?
It's got everything. It's got the oscillators, it's got a filter, it's got an envelope. I mean, you can actually use it as a synthesizer, and there's a little tape recorder next to it, so you can tape your doodlings.
It's so clever.
The most fascinating fact of all is it's actually a Moog synthesizer. I used to have my own Moog synthesizer way back when, and even then it was a vintage piece. Mm. It's not actually pronounced Moog.
Oh,
the name is Robert Moog.
Oh, right, okay.
As in Vogue.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
But, if you don't know what we're talking about, if you open your Google page today and... it's the Google Doodle one, celebrating...
Robert Moog, the inventor of the Moog synthesizer and the Mini Moog.
Aren't they clever, though, the way that they do that?
Well, this doodle is actually very, very clever indeed. Yeah. I mean, technologically, it's amazing. And it was actually produced by a Google employee who wasn't on the doodle team. He used his Google. Google gives you 20% of your day to do whatever you want to do, to pursue your own private projects.
Right.
So this has been his project over the past several months, was creating a fully functioning Moog synthesizer that will actually function and work on Google's page.
And do you know, because obviously by tomorrow it's going to have gone, is there a way to access the previous Google Doodles?
Doodles Passim, I'm sure there is. I don't know, I've never looked. No. I've never been that interested. Although last year's Les Paul guitar
was
brilliant.
That was the one I was going to say. Yeah. I love that one too. You could pluck the strings of the guitar, couldn't you?
Yes, but this one goes beyond that. I mean, not just having a keyboard you can play, but oscillators and an envelope and filter that you can apply to that. You can actually create your own synthesized sounds and then record them. I mean, the server space alone, I mean, the loss to human productivity alone must be enormous.
But the fun is even more.
Oh, the fun. And they even managed to make it spell Google.
Wonderful. I love it. I really love those Google Doodles. And, welcome to the programme. Let me just give you a little bit of a rundown about what we will be discussing this afternoon. We'll, of course, be going through the news headlines with Alexander here. We'll be joined a little bit later on in the programme also by Tom Shambler, who's editor of Stuff magazine. See what he's bringing to the table with him today. And then coming up in the second hour, our theme for this week's show, we're going to be discussing e-books. And what are they? How are they doing? How are, in fact, perhaps... bookstores handling e-books. We're going to have got some great guests who are joining us. Anna Bachalder, who's the CEO and co-founder of Bonn Education. You may remember Anna, who's joined us numerous times on this very programme. And Christopher Bachalder, who's a creative director, also an author and also co-founder of Bonn Education. And Mary Ames, a writer and educator at Bonn Education. So all three will be talking to us this afternoon about The Adventures of BB and Sam. It's a wonderful new series and it follows two young characters as they travel the globe learning important lessons about culture and values. The first one is called The Return of the Champion, where they travel to Thailand. And big congratulations to them. I know this has taken a long time to get through and they've been working on. But it's an e-book and it's an interactive e-book. And it's really great. Did you get a chance to look at it?
Yes, I did. Mm. It looks fabby. And very interesting the way that people are experimenting with different forms of books now. Yeah. I'm sure we'll be talking about that. There's lots in the second hour of the show, but you know what we used to think of as a book has now changed. And what is a book? And what is a game? And what's an interactive experience?
When is a book not a book?
Absolutely. And when you can enrich books, add new content into books, and do these wonderful things now, you're starting to create a multimedia experience. The Luddite side of you must sort of mourn for the good old papery thing between two covers that you used to curl up on the sofa and read.
Indeed.
But what kids now are being presented is stuff like this that really is increasing their ability to take in information, to be entertained while they're being informed. There's also a debate there, you know, is that a good thing or not? Should you be brought up with linear narrative and only then be given this other stuff once you're 5 or 6 or 7? Or should kids grow up with this now as part of their DNA, as we did with books?
Well, it's a good question. I would be of the sense that I would like to have both. I certainly think that you cannot keep yourself locked away and ignore it. And I think they're so rich and wonderful experiences, these sorts of e-books. But I would also like to feel that the what we know, what we originally knew as what a book is, should also remain definitely in our vocabulary and in our rooms and in our bookshelves and on our bedside tables.
But, you know, is somebody who's been brought up with, you know, whiz bang flash multimedia entertainment presented with it is a truth universally acknowledged that a man in possession of a fortune should be in search of a wife. if a kid is presented with that, will they just sit there and go, no, brain skitter, I'm going back to my multimedia whiz bang?
No, they will learn from it and they will argue against it if they can. They will use their knowledge to come up with their own different arguments and belief systems. If they want to or not, I think it's. I don't think you can just throw it out the window and ignore it. It's, you know, without the past that you've started. Without the past, you know, we don't know who we are.
Oh, so it's the past. I think, you acknowledge that?
Well, of course it is. I mean, that's what was that our Pride and Prejudice. I mean,
yes.
We're still reading it now. It's important to acknowledge that and to still have that incorporated into our lives,
but
or else we'll never understand where we are today.
I use that to illustrate the fact that language is difficult for somebody not used to that language. That form of linear narrative is difficult for somebody who's not used to linear narrative, who can get much better and much faster reward out of a device that's giving you multimedia access rather than reading.
Yes, I know, but that's why I think it's important to have and to teach linear narrative.
Those nasty sequential word things that all have
absolutely,
to be in the
or
right
else we'll
order.
All be sort of, you know, speaking in sound bites and not actually be able to hold a proper conversation. And you might say, well, the art of conversation is going to be dead along with it as well. But I think that's really sad that if we to even think about accepting that as a possibility.
I've got a 13-year-old niece and she can't hold a conversation.
Well, this is why I think it's really sad. I mean, I had this great conversation yesterday with this wonderful gentleman that joined us on the programme, who is an Emirati guy, and he was, you know, he was saying he grew up with that in his family, that they all, at meal times, mobile phones off, get them away, we all sit down and we have a conversation. It doesn't matter how old or how young the family member is, they all have their time to ask them how their day was, etc. And I just thought, gosh, that is really wonderful. And it sounds, and I'd love that to continue in, you know, in my family and as it was, and to carry on. And I think if that is lost to all sitting around reading iPads and, yeah, fair enough, learning fantastic things about the world, but I think it's a great loss, actually, and should be kept.
Quite right.
Shall I get down now?
No, I actually, funnily enough, oddly enough, I completely agree with you.
Oh, you do now, do you? Right,
I do.
Okay.
Although it's increasingly difficult, you know, turn off the devices, turn off those TV sets, turn off those Blackberries, those iPads, yeah. Those other things. You know, nothing must ping or bleep during a mealtime.
What do you think, listeners? Tell us, what do you think? Do you think the world is... Well, let me think of a question. Let's see what we can sort of put out there and get some debate going. Shall we forget about linear reading? Shall we forget about books and move on and embrace the world of technology? Or shall we carry on and hang on to those books as well?
A great place to be for that would be Bali.
Why?
The Balinese believe that you shouldn't speak to somebody when they're eating, so that you're uninterrupted. Nobody will ever hassle you or do anything while you're eating.
Really?
Yeah. It's supposed to be eating as you time.
That's lovely. I believe that. So this is our discussion for today. I'm sure we'll have lots more to talk about, but we'd love for you to join in the conversation as well in the second hour. I must also just mention that we're really fortunate to have Narain Jashanmal joining us in the studio, who I know is pretty strong and really got a lot of great opinions on this subject of e-books. He's the CEO of Jashanmal Books and Magazines. So I think fantastic to be able to share with us both sides of having grown up possibly with books and you know, the real books in the covers and on the word, the linear writing, as Alexander's talking about, but to also being very much involved in the whole sort of world of technology. So he's got sort of one foot in both. We'd love to see what he thinks are the future of books. That's coming up, as I said, in the second hour. Now, just before we get on with the programme, I also want to tell you about our competition that we have running today. It's been running throughout the week, so if you haven't had a chance to win already, then this could be your day today. It's to win a wonderful package, a triple package at the Thai Privilege Spa, who are actually celebrating their third birthday. It's a 30-minute back and shoulder cranial massage, 30-minute oriental foot reflexology, and an organic conditioning wash and blow dry to give away. Sounds fabulous. Keeping it simple for you today, as always, just text in the name of the spa, Thai Privilege Spa 4001. Do put your name on there and listen out at the end of the show when I will be choosing a winner. Over to you, Alexander. Just a quick soundbite, if you can, of the stories that you've got for us.
Well, we've got loads of stuff been happening. The big one, of course, is Facebook. The other one is Motorola Mobility. And we've also got a roundup of where Nokia is with its cash, which I thought was fascinating. But the big story at the moment is the great Facebook IPO.
Yes, isn't it?
And I mean, that's been covered and covered, and it will be covered even more, but we'll go over the bases anyway. Facebook did IPO, something like 570 million shares were traded. NASDAQ got very rocky, its infrastructure was rocky, there were some problems with cancellations. There were people trying to cancel deals on the day because they'd been convinced to oversubscribe because of demand, ended up owning a lot more shares than they'd expected to own, trying to offload them.
Were you ever tempted to purchase?
No. Not $100 billion valuation for Facebook, I just think is extraordinary. It's extreme. It's ridiculous. We're going back to the days of the dot-com boom where people would value a property. What's Facebook offering you? It's not offering a tenable business model that makes that worthwhile. It's offering eyeballs. You know, it's got a billion eyeballs. Well, yeah, great. Twitter's got hundreds of millions of eyeballs, but where's the revenue model? And until you can see a very real revenue model. Now, Google IPO'd with a very real revenue model, and that company's now got $28 billion revenue. That's worth having. Facebook hasn't. It's something like $4 billion. So why would you value a company with a $4 billion revenue at a $100 billion stock valuation?
Well, that was the whole point, and it was what we discussed last week, how they actually did manage to do that. I'm presuming it's just from the access to 900 million people, is that correct?
Well, yes, but I mean, if you look at the figures, Thomson Reuters Starmine had a look at the figures, and that's financial service part of Thomson Reuters, and they would look at a 10.8% annual growth rate for Facebook. Looking at some of the modelling at the moment, and some of the Morgan Stanley revised during the week of the IPO, it revised some of its estimates of Facebook's revenue. And Thomson Reuters would value the stock at $9.59 a share, which would be a 72% discount on the current price it's trading at.
Wow, okay.
So that would be their valuation. The current price is $31. The trading range was obviously $38 on the IPO.
Yeah.
At $31, it would indicate a forward price-to-earnings ratio of 60. Well, Google's forward price-to-earnings ratio is 13.3. So if Google's P/E is 13.3, you're saying Facebook's is 60. Where's that coming from? I don't understand where it came from.
I don't know.
And there's obviously been some very odd happenings about the way that the banks have chosen to handle this, the way that they've briefed some investors and not others. The SEC has said there's room for regulatory oversight of what's been going on here. The IPO itself has closed, Monday closed 11% down, and now we're a further 8.9% down. So, you know, a lot of institutional investors and a lot of private investors bought Facebook shares at IPO and have now lost significant money. Are they going to continue to try and get out, or are they going to try and hold on? It's going to be very interesting over the next couple of days to see what happens.
I think it is. It's certainly one to watch, isn't it? And it's moving all the time as well. The story is just constantly coming out about it. And we're going to go to our first break of the hour. We've got loads more stories that we're going to be talking about. A couple more Facebook stories. We've got Twitter's in trouble, or Twitterers in trouble.
Oh, yes.
Facebook opened an office in Dubai, which is quite interesting. A couple more stories as well, all coming up.